Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back, fellow optimists. It's Sophia Tapia here, your host on the Future Positive Podcast, a podcast from XPRIZE that aims to bring you the most future-forward topics from the world's brightest minds. If you're new to Future Positive, in each episode, you'll hear from world leaders, creators, entrepreneurs, innovators, and changemakers who are paving the way for innovation on and off this planet we call home. Converting carbon into fuel is the next exciting frontier in the ever-changing energy landscape. For this week's Future Positive podcast, we get the scoop on the future of fuel with two finalists of the Energy COSIA Carbon X Prize, who are now successfully turning carbon into fuels. First, journalist Amelia Abraham interviews Brooklyn-based Staff Sheehan, the CTO of Air Company. Then she catches up with Jason Salfi, co-founder and CEO of Dimensional Energy based in Ithaca, New York.
So to start with, please, can you introduce yourself?
Yep, I'm Stafford Sheehan, and I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Air Company.
Amazing. And a little bit about your company, maybe, for listeners who might be unfamiliar.
Yeah, absolutely. So Air Company was launched in 2019. We transform carbon dioxide into high-purity alcohols for consumer goods. The way we do that is we combine the carbon dioxide with water and renewable electricity. And the only byproduct of our process is oxygen. So you could think of us like a tree, except much faster and much more efficient, so that we can remove carbon dioxide at the same rate that we're emitting it into the atmosphere.
Amazing. Yeah, I remember when I first found out that you guys make vodka from CO2. I had no idea that that was even a thing. So a couple of questions about the technology for people like me who don't necessarily, you made it sound very simple, but don't necessarily know much about it. How long has this type of technology been around?
So this type of technology, and I would say all the sorts of technology you see in the CO2 conversion space, have been known for almost a century, even longer in many cases. The challenge has been doing the research and developing the technology to make them economic, to make them efficient, economic, and work effectively. So, you know, one of the big innovations that we bring to the table is we transform carbon dioxide into ultra high purity alcohols, including ethanol that we use to make our vodka, which is the product that we're most known for.
And how efficient is it? I mean, is this a costly process?
Well, you know, we use renewable electricity, so it's our biggest cost is the cost of renewable electricity. So I would say that all processes that transform carbon dioxide into consumer goods or into products currently are more costly than their fossil fuel equivalents. But that's just because fossil fuels are so cheap and they're easily accessible. But obviously fossil fuels pollute our planet. So our process is more costly than the corresponding fossil fuel-based process. But we believe that the sustainability of our process makes a long-term cost actually lower.
Definitely, for sure, especially the cost on the climate is much lower. But is one of the challenges trying to bring that cost down over time?
Yeah, so our biggest challenge really is scaling our technology in a way that keeps the cost low. And that's something that I work on every day. That's something that I have an entire team working on every day. That's really what we do, as a business.
Right. And you've just alluded to, how renewables are preferable over burning fossil fuels. And one of the outcomes of your CO2 conversion is creating fuel. Is that right?
Yes. When you make alcohols from carbon dioxide, like methanol and ethanol, there are, I would say, call them chemical applications. I include consumer ethanol in that kind of chemical application bucket. And then there's fuel applications. Methanol and ethanol both can be either used as a drop-in fuel for combustion engines, or for fuel cells, or they can be blended with gasoline. And that's why whenever you go to gas up your car, at least in the US, when you go to gas up your car, there's a little sticker on the gasoline, on the gasoline pump that says 10% ethanol by volume.
Interesting. Okay. And so you've been working on this for how long?
So I've been working on this technology for a little over a decade now. I did my PhD in artificial photosynthesis, and then I started this business. My co-founder and I met in 2017. We had been working on the business in stealth mode for a little while, and then we officially launched it in 2019. So we've been working on the business, I would say, for almost 5 years, really have been, the business has been really growing and scaling for the last two since we formally launched.
Cool. And how long has the fuel component of your work been a part of that? Well, how long have you been thinking about the applications in terms of fuel?
Really, since the beginning. Initially, I was making alcohols like methanol and ethanol from CO2, doing research on that for fuel. The vodka actually came as almost a surprise.
I've heard that you are working with NASA in terms of developing rocket fuel. I wondered if you could tell me a bit more about that and how it came about.
Yeah, we started working with NASA as part of their CO2 conversion challenge, part of their centennial challenges. We applied for it and we were fortunate enough to win phase one. So we began working with NASA for that. We've been working on expanding our aerospace division of our company for other applications, including things like rocket fuel. One of the reasons for that is because we have this carbon dioxide conversion technology, and we want to look at all of the high value applications we can use for it, because it's really challenging for us to compete, especially without any sort of, environmental incentive in the marketplace. It's very challenging for us to compete with things like natural gas or gasoline that's made from low cost fossil fuels. But one place where we can compete much more effectively is in outer space, where there is carbon dioxide and water, but there are no fossil fuels. So we looked into applications on space stations and on Mars, and that's something that we're continuing to work on. And in most of those cases, we are looking at actually making fuel. Vodka is as high a priority on Mars as returning to Earth is.
Well, I don't know how much else there is to do except drink vodka on Mars.
Well, we can take care of both needs.
Yeah, I suppose you can. That was my next question. Can we turn the CO2 on Mars into fuel? I mean, do you have any more kind of insight into how that would work or what that would look like?
Yeah, absolutely. On Mars, there is water dissolved in the regolith there, and 95% of the Martian atmosphere is carbon dioxide. So there's actually plenty of the feedstocks that are required. There's no shortage of either of those. It's just a matter of collecting them and then converting the water and carbon dioxide into, for rocket fuel, we focus on cryogenic liquid methane. Which is the favored fuel for reusable rockets. So we are that for this application, we can do research on Earth that would help to understand what it takes to get a system like that to Mars. Because I think realistically, if we're ever going to have a human mission, if we're going to send people to Mars, the fuel to come home is probably going to have to be made in situ on Mars. So, you know, the idea is to send something like this over to Mars ahead of a human mission that can then make fuel. And then when the when we get there, we can use that. We'll already have the gas station set up, and we can use that to fly back.
Amazing. That makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, I think it's a it's something that, you know, NASA has been thinking about for several decades. You know, and it falls under the umbrella of in situ resource utilization.
And how far away do you think that sort of technology is?
So I would say that we're very close to being able to demonstrate it on Earth. In order to make things flight ready, it does take, there is a little bit more of a time investment. So I would say we're about 3 to 4 years from being able to, you know, from being able to deploy something that's flight ready. And then of course there's the level of priority for this sort of thing, you know, from an aerospace perspective, because we ourselves don't make rockets. We do carbon dioxide conversion. So it's going to depend on what the priority is from that industry as well, as to how quick they want to deploy things like this.
Right. And that's how long it would take to take this technology to Mars. We're thinking, well, how long the technology would be theoretically ready to go, in terms of actually converting the CO2 there. What about how long it would take to use CO2 fuel to send the rocket to Mars?
Well, that's something that we could build today. You know, I think that that's something that is, you know, we've researched pretty well on a laboratory scale. And that's something that's readily, you know, readily able to be built today. You know, again, it's a matter of cost. It's a matter of cost and priority for the aerospace industry. Because for the aerospace industry, of course, a lot whenever they're using cryogenic liquid methane, they're getting that from natural gas. So it's a question for them as to whether or not they want to be sustainable. And then secondly, you know, it's also a matter of the maturity of liquid methane driven engines. So the rockets that use liquid methane and liquid oxygen as propellants are still in, I would say, they're in very late stages of development. We've used them for sure before, but they're not very widely adopted yet. But I think that that's changing, and the adoption of methane-fueled or rockets that use a methane propellant is gradually becoming more and more widespread.
Great. And in terms of transport more broadly, beyond just rockets, which not all of us have the privilege of traveling in, how long do you think it will be before more transport, or even will there ever be a time when all transport is fueled by converted CO2?
Yeah, so I think that there will be. I think it's going to be a combination of renewable electricity, because you need to get your energy from somewhere, right? Transport is kinetic energy. And in order to do that, you need to have an energy source in the first place. So, you know, that would be renewable energy. Now for light vehicles, it's actually more efficient for, it's more efficient for things like batteries. It makes a lot more sense, because you don't need a lot to move a very lightweight vehicle. You don't need a lot of energy density. Energy density is how many kilograms of weight you require for your material that carries your energy. So batteries have very poor energy density. You need a lot of weight in a battery to be able to store a relatively small amount of energy. But liquid fuels, like what we make, have, and fuels derived from carbon dioxide, have very high energy density. So if you're trying to move something that's heavy, you really need to use liquid fuels. Like, for example, if you're trying to fly an airplane. But if you're trying to move something that's very light, like a scooter, for example, you're probably better off using a battery. And it really all comes down to that whole energy density argument. It makes almost no sense to fly an airplane off of a poor energy dense battery, just as much as it makes little sense to run a scooter off of, you know, off of a combustion engine with a CO2 derived fuel. But that's actually great news for us, because that means we're going to have a variety of different solutions that together will help to fight climate change. There is no one silver bullet that's going to solve the problem. CO2 derived fuels can solve the problem for transportation that requires a high energy density, and batteries can solve the problem for transportation that requires low energy density.
Amazing, thank you. Obviously, we're excited about the future of transport that can be fueled by carbon dioxide. I wanted to know what else in the realm of carbon tech is getting you excited at the moment, or whether you guys at Air Company have any new products coming out.
Absolutely, we do. So we will later this year and in the next year have several new products coming out. So stay tuned. And all utilizing our CO2 to alcohols technology. So that's one really exciting piece. And then a second really exciting piece, I think overall is just the momentum that the field has. And really, I think the most important thing about that is getting buy-in from the general public. Right now, there are a lot of really hot topics, out there in the business world and in the public eye. I would say that a lot of those topics are not things that are critical to the survival of the human race long term. However, fighting climate change is, because that is actually an existential threat. And carbon tech as a way of fighting climate change, as a way of changing product, changing our way of life from products that emit carbon dioxide to products that enable circular carbon dioxide, such as carbon dioxide to fuels, it is something that really needs to take more of a forefront in people's minds. I think that there's a lot of other stuff out there that have been, especially with the pandemic and everything like that, that have been occupying people's headspace pretty heavily. And a lot of the world's almost forgotten about climate change. Which is not good, because just like the pandemic, I would say here in America, we spent too much time ignoring it until it became a real problem. So we kind of let the pot boil over a little bit. We didn't take countermeasures early on in the pandemic that would have minimized its impact, like many other countries like New Zealand and Australia did. And drawing a parallel to climate change, which has the potential to be even worse on a global scale, drawing the comparison to climate change, we're making the same mistake twice, where we're just letting the problem ruminate and increase without actually taking countermeasures to try to tackle it. So that's something that my hope for the future is that there'll be drastically increased awareness for carbon tech and for climate change, because that's really what we need. So all of this means we need better technology, and we need increased public support and private support of technologies that help to fight climate change. I think there have been a lot of people that have been doing doing a good job to help to increase public awareness. But unlike COVID, climate change is something that's going to be more of a silent killer. Whereas COVID is more of an acute problem. People experience that really personally. Climate change is something that we're not going to experience very personally for quite some time, but we have to address it now because it's a gradually growing problem. And I would say, on a positive note, the technology development toward addressing climate change has accelerated in the last 10 years, like incredibly. And these technologies that are, both the technology that we use and the technologies that others are using, need the support from people like you to help to bring them to a reality, to help them to overcome the I would say more polluting approaches, such as fossil fuel driven ones. And that sort of support is really necessary. And I think that as a field, carbon tech has taken that momentum and moved forward with it really excellently.
Great. Amazing. Thank you so much.
That was Staff Sheehan. Now, Amelia catches up with Jason Salfie, co-founder and CEO of Dimensional Energy.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, Amelia.
Nice to be speaking to you today. I wondered, please, could you just introduce yourself for our listeners to start off with?
Sure thing. My name is Jason Salfie, co-founder and CEO of Dimensional Energy.
And please, could you tell us a little bit about what Dimensional Energy do?
Sure thing. So Dimensional Energy is, we're scaling a platform that uses concentrated solar to convert carbon dioxide to sustainable aviation fuel.
Amazing. Okay. And how long has this technology been around for, and how long has the company been around for?
So we started the company in 2016, and the idea for founding the company actually came out of two labs at Cornell University run by Tobias Hanreth and David Erickson. And we got funding through the National Science Foundation and joined the Carbon XPRIZE in pursuit of scaling a gigaton type solution to climate change.
Incredible. And so for someone like me who's not very good with science, what's the best explanation?
What's the best explanation of the technology?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure thing. So so basically what we do is we have a concentrated solar input. So we concentrate sunlight to run our reactor. And what we do is we take carbon dioxide and simply cleave off an oxygen atom to form carbon monoxide, which is a highly reactive form of carbon, and combine it with hydrogen to make syngas. So that syngas in the right proportion can be then pressurized, heated, and catalyzed and turned into liquid fuels.
So where is the tech at the moment? In terms of the rollout and scale, are you testing it? What's the current update?
Yeah, so we after Carbon XPRIZE pilot, which we scaled up to about a 10 ton per year syngas pilot system, we're scaling up to a small 4 barrel per day unit and integrating the whole platform. So we have this solar energy CO2 utilization platform where, you know, our vision is that the whole of all the components is greater than the sum of its parts. So integrating all the different components for the first time is where we're at right now. And we're simultaneously designing a 50 barrel per day commercial scale demonstration that'll be deployed, commissioned in the next 2 years. And so we're trying to scale pretty rapidly. There's a massive demand for sustainable aviation fuel, and it's imperative that we come up with pathways to defossilize that hydrocarbon supply chain.
Well, I wanted to ask you, in the broader sense, what's not working when it comes to fuel, and why is your product therefore important?
So right now, hydrocarbon fuels account for a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide emissions on the planet. So in the aviation industry, for example, you have over 1 billion tons of carbon dioxide emitted per year. So what could work with our fuel is that if we're able to sell the fuel directly at 100% non-blended, we could have a carbon neutral fuel. So we take carbon dioxide and turn that into a fuel and put it into a sort of industrial carbon cycle. So whereas you may combust fuel in the air, down on land, we absorb that CO2 and then close the loop on that cycle and turn it back into fuels, as opposed to extracting more fossil carbon from the earth and putting that up into the atmosphere linearly.
Okay, amazing. And that makes a lot of sense. What would the impact therefore be on the average traveler's carbon footprint? How could it change the way that we travel as individuals?
So, yeah, so our vision is to make sustainable aviation fuel that can support carbon neutral air travel. So if we can certify our fuel for 100% non-blended use, it could mean that air travel could become carbon neutral. As the planes combust the fuel, we'll reverse that combustion on land. And because we integrate with 100% renewables on site, we close the loop on that carbon cycle for aviation. What that could mean for your traveler is that if all other systems are well maintained for carbon circularity, and energy is, you know, renewable energy is used for everything else that goes into travel, your travel around the world could be carbon neutral and less harmful. And then all we need to do is, you know, maintain other forms of stewardship to make sure that we're practicing good hygiene when it comes to materials and different things we also do.
Well, amazing. What are some of the challenges to get us there? What do you see as the kind of biggest hurdles? Because everything you've described sounds like exactly where we need to be.
So extraction of fossil carbon has been going on for, you know, well over 100 years at this point. And so what we're doing is right now we're creating a whole new supply chain for hydrocarbon fuels. And so carbon dioxide has always been regarded as a waste stream because it's a low energy molecule that isn't easily used. You need to apply a lot of energy to use it. So it's costly. It's costly to procure and purify and get prepared for utilization. If we use carbon dioxide as a feedstock, we need to drive costs down. And there's a tremendous amount of effort going into that right now. Great companies are rising to the occasion. A lot of investment dollars are flowing in for point source carbon capture, next generation. There's a lot of funds coming towards direct air capture, which is a little further away from hitting cost prices that we could use. But it's scaling fast. And then also hydrogen production. So green hydrogen is imperative to the integration of carbon dioxide into fuels and chemicals and products. We need to have green hydrogen production as well.
Okay, and how long do you think that it'll take to sort of overcome some of these challenges? I mean, when do you think that we might achieve the world of aviation that you sort of painted a picture of?
Sustainable aviation fuels are available today, which is great. There are companies that have biological processes that are starting to bring their costs down, still above fossil carbon sourced hydrocarbon fuels, but coming down in price. Our platform will be ready for commercialization, we believe, in 2024, 2025. So we're coming on strong, trying to get it done as fast as we possibly can. Our process is it's a modular platform. So once we've mastered it once or twice, we can just kind of replicate that whole system and then scale accordingly, integrate, work with other energy majors to do green syngas production and then transform that syngas into liquid fuels at scale.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to seeing how that goes. One question to leave you with is, what carbon technology is getting you excited at the moment beyond everything that Dimensional Energy are doing?
Well, I came to this from an impact perspective. There's a lot of money to be made in carbon tech and carbon utilization. It's a growing field. It's looked at as a potential technology that could help, you know, mitigate CO2 beyond what renewables and efficiency can do. So the things that get me most excited about carbon utilization are the ones that can meet gigaton reduction potentials. You know, so those would be, you know, downhill reactions such as what's happening in building materials, and also carbon dioxide. Utilization takes a lot of energy. So technologies that get me excited that are going to make fuels, chemicals, products, etc., are the ones that can go to market without competing for precious renewable energy assets today. So to put that into perspective, to make carbon dioxide actually carbon neutral, we need to use renewable energy. And if we, you know, look at what needs to happen to make the world's energy system net zero emissions, we need to commission over 100 gigawatts per year for the next 20 years. That's literally replicating the energy system we have several times over in the next 20 years. And that doesn't include using CO2. So that's why we're focused on bringing our own renewable energy system integrated so that we can transform precious sunlight energy into liquid fuels at a really high conversion rate and do it cost effectively and not rely on the grid, but be complementary to grid energy. And I guess maybe I think I might add the other thing that has me excited about carbon tech is actually the regulatory regimes that are starting to come into play. You know, governments all over the world right now are starting to recognize that carbon utilization is something imperative to help mitigate climate change. And so if these regulatory regimes include, you know, the startup companies that are trying to bring technologies forward, it'll really help accelerate technology maturation and bring a lot more capital to the space. So I would say, you know, looking at this CO2 utilization as an integrated problem to be solved by government, private industry, large corporations, and ultimately end customers.
Great. Thank you so much, Jason. That was super interesting.
Jason Salfi there in conversation with Amelia Abraham. Thanks for listening to this Future Positive podcast. If you'd like to support our show, share this episode with fellow futurist friends, and remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Apple or wherever you get your pods. Your feedback really does help. If you want to know more about what we're doing in the world of carbon, head over to xprize.org, where you can learn more about the $100 million XPRIZE carbon removal. This podcast comes from XPRIZE, a global future positive movement of over 1 million people and rising, delivering radical breakthroughs for the benefit of humanity. Sign up to join us and support the movement that is making a change in the world 10 times faster. Whether it's lending a hand, a dollar, or an idea, we all have a role to play in making the future a better place. The only way to get the future we want is to create it ourselves. Learn more at xprize.org. See you next week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.